Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
At Boar's Head, we've been going back to school for over 115 years. And this year, every school lunch is reason to celebrate with the flavors your kids love and the exceptional quality you expect. Helping you make school lunch fresh, easy, and delicious. Ring the bell. The deli is open. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
To infinity and beyond.
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
This is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth.
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker. Say what one more goddamn time.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not?
He hit our son!
Happy birthday, Polly.
Oh, no, I got me some. Well, how's the Joker, baby?
Welcome to the Lights, Camera, Barstool episode. Almost had it this time. Thought I memorized it. It's 326, I think is the exact. It is 326. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins. We're putting sort of a lid on 2020 movies today. Sort of. We're going to do a bit of like a catch-up on Sunday of movies that we haven't seen that... Maybe not as easy to access for everybody, like the Minaris of the world, Nomadland, which I don't even think you can, I still don't think you can rent Minari. But yeah, we're going to do a catch up on those movies, but we're doing a release that is already out and you can see online or in theaters. That is News of the World. And then we're also going to do our top 10 movies of 2020, which you can, of course, also go find on movierankings.net, which big update tonight. Ken Jack added like 50 anime editions.
Oh, there's a lot of anime coming.
Excuse me, as you taught me proper way to say it. Animes, the proper way to say that.
Animes.
Yeah, so a lot of movies on there, a lot of cool stuff happening there. A lot of our updates are actually on the back end there, so a lot of them you're not seeing, but it's going to only make it easier for us to update and keep the website going, and then hopefully add user profiles whenever it makes sense. You don't want to, if you learn one thing from the movie Social Network, you never want to launch before you should launch. I didn't even think that happened in that movie, but that's what I'm trying to get at. So yeah, we're doing
that
tonight.
Yeah, that's what I took away from the Social Network.
that
was the
most.
Big
the only
of the
thing.
Movie.
The tech problems were what I took away. And then yeah, so we're doing that top 10 movies. And then on Sunday we'll do top 10 we're looking forward to in 2021. Also an interview with Paul Bettany on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
He actually gave us like a legitimate good tease.
A scoop?
Like he gave us like our, we've gotten scooped before, but he gave us like an actual like real scoop. He was great. And it's usually the balancing act of like, okay, did we talk about enough things? Now we can talk Marvel and Star Wars with these people. But it was for WandaVision, so we just talked Marvel the whole time. It was great.
It was such a bizarre experience in that sense, because we are just so used to talking to them about whatever project they're pitching, whether we're interested in it or not, and then also wanting to talk about their other stuff. But now we're just talking about the thing we were super, super interested in, which is kind of rare. It was cool.
Yeah, it's always just waiting for the publicist to come on and be like, stop, which has never happened. Don't get me wrong. It's never happened. You just, at one day it will. They'll be like, enough. Stop talking about Tom Cruise's ass. Please ask about our premium cable show.
Yeah,
what's happening other than that though? What's going on?
How tall is Paul Bettany?
Not
that you could gauge from a zoom in.
Yes, I've seen him twice at GMA. I saw him once at the Infinity War. I think he's taller if I remember, but I don't quite fuzzy on that one.
He looks tall, but I think it's just like oh god, never mind. 6'3". Oh, way
tall.
Wrong. I was
tall
really
king.
Hoping that is a slimming effect, right? Because he just looks
thin.
He looked hot too. He was wearing like a mock turtleneck and a black leather jacket over it. He looks so cool.
What's amazing is like how good looking Hollywood people are, that you have like, you know, like Paul Bettany's a really good looking guy, but when you see them in like a non acting context, then you're like, wow, Like I'm a different, I'm nothing.
Built different.
Yeah. I'm just built different.
RIP to Paul Bettany, but I bet you he never got one chapter deep into Sekiro like I did.
No way, man. You think Paul Bettany beat Persona 5? Doubt it.
He barely doesn't even know what Final Fantasy is, dude.
Doubt that shit. Yeah, no way he played Final Fantasy 6. No way. No
He's
way.
Like, he, big boss, huh? Who's that?
No way he feigned Kefka. Yeah, not much is going on, Jeff. You know, it's just that it's that time of the year. Well, they say like right around there's some news article I read where some insurance company said like right now is the most depressing time of year. Or like one day, I think maybe it was today was like the most depressing day of the year, just based on like proximity to the holidays and length of daylight. And, you know, it probably was bullshit, but I don't love January. It's just, you know, it's kind of bleh. So I'm just weathering through that, you know?
It is a rather gloomy month. That is true.
That's for sure.
I've been itching to go back to the gym. Like I haven't had the motivation to go, but I'm not there yet where I feel comfortable in the gym environment.
Yeah. Cause it just feels like everything's just recycling, like, and not necessarily even recycling, more just circulating air wise. Not that it would matter if you're taking the proper precautions, but still, like, I don't know. I feel stupid about it.
You never know. I made it this far, right? And then I haven't, you know, knock on wood, I haven't had COVID to my knowledge, and I've been safe about it. So it's like, why not just keep being safe? It's my philosophy. But then there is part of me that's like, man, I just love to go do a nice, like, you know, circa 2008 bench and bicep curl session. I'm just getting my upper body completely pumped up.
Back and by day. You ever do like a sweet one of those?
Sure I have, man.
Feeling after.
I'm sure I have. I felt like I watched some children's entertainment I wanted to talk about with my daughter. Let me try to think about it.
Good luck. I don't even know if she speaks English yet.
Oh no. What I did was that I watched Totoro with her.
Oh, nice.
For the first time. I mean, I love Totoro, but she actually really liked it. It was, they did the Roku HBO Max deal over the holidays or sometime around that. And so now I got all the HBO Max movies and I just kind of sat down. She enjoyed it. I mean, she has a weird attention span. She's got 30 minutes and then after 30 minutes, she'll get up, maybe do something else. And then she'll settle back down, you know, just a 3-year-old, going to be 3 in April. So, but it was nice to have her watch something that wasn't a weird, like, Russian computer generated YouTube video for kids.
Dude, there's one of those that I had seen. I think it's called like OK123 or something, or 123 OK. They're like bizarre watching them because they're literally like hypnotic to children. Like it's so freaky, and I don't understand how they're allowed on the airwaves.
She loves Blippi. She's gotten into Blippi.
Oh no!
Yeah. Oh no!
Yeah.
Oh,
so I got. No. You know, I had to tell my wife, you know, Blippi's sorted internet shock humor history and whatnot, and she didn't really care. She's like, well, you're not going to show our daughter that video, right? I'm like, no. And he's like, well, she doesn't give a shit. Like, what does she know? So keep watching Blippi. And then have we talked about Ryan's World? Do you guys know about
that's the kid who opens the toys, right?
Yeah.
We were both very aware of who he is.
He's the kid who opens the toys with his family and makes it, but she loves Ryan's World. So she's like, she's really into the kids influencers now. Like his personalities.
You ever gotten her one of the, I've seen them at Target and stuff, like the Ryan's eggs or whatever. It's like an egg full of toys Ryan likes.
I have one just outside my door. He never plays with it anymore.
Well, are they good?
It's purely, you know, the whole like hot, from what I've gleaned, I'll go into toy talk, right? What I've gleaned is the hot trend in toys for the past year and a half has been like the pop surprises or toys that have a really high satisfaction factor for unboxing and being surprised, because, you know, that's what people do on YouTube. So you have these intricately packed things in these cardboard boxes and you open them up and they're just shitty toys inside. So the thrills from like the actual opening them up, but you're left with toys that have no redeeming educational or play value. And that's kind of what this Ryan's toy set was like. It was fun opening it up, but then you're just like, this is Happy Meal shit. This is the Happy Meal toys.
Yes, that's what I figured. I figured it was very low quality toy.
Oh, it was, speaking of low quality toys, I made a purchase. I bought something for Trill Ballins. I would have bought one for you too, Jeff, but I don't think you would use it. I'm going to send you, Jeff, what it is.
Motachi magic wand.
No, it's
a knockoff.
It's on the level. I think you're going to like it. I cannot wait for you to get it. I'm just going to say, keep a lookout on your porch. Because
okay,
I know what it is now, and the intrigue. We will reveal it when he gets it.
You said it's a toy.
it's a cheap toy from China. I'll say that much. It is. I think you're gonna like it though. But stay tuned for that, because we're definitely gonna have to make you do an unboxing.
Is it like a knockoff toy that I enjoy, like RoboCop, where it's like RotoCorp?
No, I'll just say it's a cheap product from China. It's going to take an ungodly amount of time, or it already has taken way too long to get here, just, I guess, because we're spoiled by Amazon now. But it should be there, I would assume, within this next week. So keep an eye out for that.
Amazon's giving me a lot of issues with, like, finding stuff I want anymore and finding quality stuff. I was looking for a pair of cycling shoes for the indoor bicycle. Mm-hmm. And I was like, cycling shoes. And then you go through them, and then they're all just like generic shoes with names that sound like a brand name, like Vantrox.
Yeah.
Vantrox cycling shoes. Oh, and it's like that for every single product. And I know we've talked about it anymore, but it's like, it's really hard to actually find like brand name stuff, because everything else has a brand name. I don't know. Maybe it's a good thing, but it's confusing.
They sponsor the stuff that whatever pays them for the most advertising. So if you look up like compression shorts, you're not going to get like Under Armour. You're going to get a bunch of brands which will have the letter P, it will have the letter Z, or it'll have the letter Q, or some combination of those three letters, because I think there's some sort of market research behind it. There's probably a V in there as well, where like those letters make a brand name that people might not otherwise click on, pop, right?
Yeah, like Vorklox exactly. Compression shorts. They'll have like bright colors on it, and it'll look like fine. But at the end of the day, sometimes part of being loyal to a brand is paying extra for stuff that you're going to get or not get, and you don't want to be surprised. So I'm like, well, just give me a pair of Shimano shoes. Where are those? And you really got to go digging to get to them now.
I just got a pack of. I went to Marshall's over this last week, and I got a pack of like 500 ankle length New Balance socks, just because I'm like, I like New Balance socks. I'm just gonna, and it was $7.99. That's not bad in my opinion. It's a good deal for socks.
I've gotten into the, I don't know if I should say the name, but it's like a DTC sock brand. I've really gotten into them. I found that their socks are really enjoyable to wear.
Okay.
What a tease.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you never know what ad read's going to come after this segment, Jeff. I could say it's like sock brand X, Y, and Z, and then you could be like, today's ad read.
We have no clothing brands today.
It's Mombasa, or was it?
It's Bombas.
Bombas.
Let's just say it's Bombas.
Mombasa, the Ethiopian sock brand.
Shark Tank product.
Bombas, really?
Yeah. Damon John, Shark Tank. Actually, there was a Shark Tank product I'm going to mention that I just saw the other day. It's a... it's slices of condiments. It's dried slices of condiments. So you don't have to mess with any of those wacky packets.
I saw something like that on TikTok,
it's like a ketchup.
It's slice. A slice of ketchup. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Which
I saw one of those, except it was toothpaste. It's a pill of toothpaste you take instead of using the squeeze tube.
I get what they're going for, but like they were pitching it for as a thing that, like restaurants would want, but like if you're a restaurant, like why would you? You're not gonna, if you're a restaurant that would have ketchup, you probably have fries, and you're not gonna only have the slices, right? Like that's a grocery store item, because you're gonna need the packet still for them to have people that have stuff to dip their fries in. So you're not gonna have both. That seems like a waste.
Yeah, the only real like value proposition I see for that thing is airplane food and camping food.
Right, which would be, camping would be grocery, but yeah.
Well, camping would be space. Like, yeah, you just, you know, you take some slices instead of a big ketchup bag or whatever.
Can you just imagine saying that though? Like, yo, throw me a slice of ketchup. It's just disgusting to say that.
Throw me a mayo chip.
Oh.
It's like a Tide Pod with mayo in it.
Oh, God.
The external part just disintegrates when it hits the warmth of the hamburger.
You eat them, eat all the components separately, as everyone loves.
it's just so random, but like I've been running ever since April, and there's been like, you know, when the Chick-fil-A ketchup packets, the Heinz ones that are real nice because they're deep and they're actually legit packets of ketchup. You rip the top off.
Yeah.
There's been one of those on my run path that I've been watching disintegrating for about 2 to 3 months now. And every time it's like a marker in my run for me. It's like I'm coming up on the fucking ketchup packet. I'm coming up on it.
Like a science experiment. You're watching.
Yeah, I just like to see. I like to see what the status of the gross ketchup thing is.
Well, first ad of the day. Let's get into it. Armor Lock. That's right. We've talked about the Armor Lock solid state drive, the G Technologies Armor Lock solid state drive. Our data privacy constantly being threatened. Leaked films, hacked servers, stolen drives, stolen data. You don't want any of that.
Mm-hmm.
All your media files, all valuable stuff, legal documents, put them on this drive because this is a drive you can unlock with your phone and, of course, lock with your phone. Send it to people, activate remote access, no passwords necessary. You just tap on a button in an app. Infield software updates as well, keeps it up to date, good to go. Self formats, it's fantastic. You got to clear some space on it. Even if you're just clearing some space on your computer, put it on this drive. No more remembering passwords or downloading software that slows you down. To be safe with your data, your media, whatever, just open the ArmorLock app on your phone or your Mac, tap the button to unlock, and off you go. No longer have to compromise speed for security. ArmorLock delivers both simultaneously, ensuring you get the high-grade security you deserve with pro-grade speeds. Your workflow will demand. It's fantastic. And collaborate with people, like I said, have remote access on. It's built to withstand the rigors of travel, being shipped or accidentally dropped. Put it in your suitcase, your backpack when you're flying. Ultra rugged for max durability and reliability. Multiple drives, multiple users. It is awesome. All linked to an app. And because Western Digital manufactures their own flash technology and solid state drives, you can be confident that their products are built from the ground up with the specifically selected elements to create the best, most consistent product experience. Go to GetArmor, GetArmorLock.com to learn more and get yours. Great drive. Use it today. Cleared up some space on my desktop. Great drive. News items. Let's start off the top. The big one, I guess, is Willy Wonka prequel will be dropping in 2023. And a couple of names that have been thrown around already. Tom Holland, Timothy Chalamet. I like the Willy Wonka and the Roald Dahl stuff that's attached to Taika Waititi, but I don't know. I think our buddy Robbie Fox, our coworker, tweeted it. He said the worst part about the remake of the movie or the retelling of the book was the younger stuff with like Christopher Lee. It was weird. It didn't work. So I don't know what they're going to do with this, but I mean, it's a tall task. This is one of those impossible roles to cast because you are in the footsteps of one of the greatest performances of all time from Gene Wilder. So I don't know. I would say my expectations are lower for this than they are for the new Space Jam. If we're talking about older things, now granted Willy Wonka older.
When I rewatched the Willy Wonka with you guys, cause we reviewed it, right? Yeah, we did. The one thing that did blow me away was the part of the backstory. So the Christopher Lee backstory is one thing, but it was the backstory where he went to go search out the Oompa Loompas.
Yeah.
He talked to the Oompa Loompa
Deep
leader.
Roy.
Yeah, Deep Roy played all the Oompa Loompas, right? But he talked to the leader and basically negotiated the worst deal of all time with them, where they would go work for him. And then Willy Wonka would give them the food they like. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably shelter and all that stuff too. But that was the part where I was like, I didn't really need, like, part of the magic is wondering, like, you know, how the Oompa Loompas get there? Like, what are they? Like, what are they doing? Exactly. And then that was like, that was like, that took away the magic, because it was like part of the 2000s, you know, like the aughts, where everything like felt like it needed an explanation in a movie. I don't know. I don't care about Willy Wonka's backstory, because part of what makes Willy Wonka actually interesting is him just being an adult weirdo and filling in the blanks with how he got that way.
It's weird, because like, I was super excited for the Taika thing, because I think Taika is such a mind that's right for that. And the way, if I remember correctly, it's just something like sort of separate. But the idea of attaching a movie that's now prequel to the existing one, it's really a no-win scenario, because everyone's going to go into this thinking it's going to suck. And like, if you don't match the level of the original 70s movie, like, everyone's going to get pissed off, right? And I think that movie, the Gene Wilder Willy Wonka, is such like a lightning in the bottle type of movie. You just can't really capture that again. And I think it's that same director that did Paddington and Paddington 2, which are like, those are delightful movies. Like, I love both those movies. I think that they're like sort of in the Wonka adjacent sort of world, in the sense that it's like really goofy British bullshit. But at the same time, just like, what, I don't really understand the point of doing this when you could do anything else with your time, especially if you're a guy that's done stuff like as successful as Paddington and Paddington 2. So I don't know. I don't think it's a winning scenario. And plus, why not just do Willy Wonka 2? The Glass Elevator, man. Glass Elevator is a story that needs to be told. The one where they go to space in the elevator, yeah, and like
president,
go to the,
yeah,
space station with the president and like,
yeah,
fight Ayla, or it was like space Hitler. I don't even remember, but it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're saying about it. It's certainly in like the nerd shit that people might get mad about, just because people get mad about stuff they experienced as a child, and everyone the age of 40 and under probably watched Willy Wonka as a child. So, you know, it's when you can't really improve on what they did in that movie, then, you know, you're just going for capitalization on the Wonka brand name, and then hoping it's like a 70 out of 100, because you know you're not going to get anywhere close to how it is. That's what they're just going for here. And big part of it is who they attach to Willy Wonka. And I can see how they can make like a competent movie out of it. But at the same time, who cares about the backstory of Willy Wonka, man?
That's
left unsaid.
I want to know how Violet Beauregard's parents got all that money.
Is it the same as the mystery and the intrigue of knowing that Darth Vader is Luke's father? Probably not. But I would say there's a large part of, I wouldn't show the prequels before watching the original Willy Wonka, because part of the intrigue of that story is when they're in that boat and they're in that tunnel, and when he's walking around, when you first enter the factory, you don't know who this guy is.
Yeah. Part of the tension of the movie is
that's why it plays.
It's thinking that you constantly questioning if this guy is a creepy weirdo who loves to murder children. Yeah. That's part of it, and then
it's lightning in a bottle, dude. It's I really don't know how to put it. Like, I don't think you can make another Wonka property that's going to be received anywhere close to the level.
No, and that's what I'm saying. It's like it's kind of defeating to work on this and know, like, well, we know it's not going to be as good as the original movie, but we're just trying to make a movie about Willy Wonka with a, you know, 25-year-old up and comer, and I'm sure his backstory will like have some sort of trauma that gets him into candy in the same way they did in the 2005 movie.
Ugh.
So who knows?
I forgot. Yeah. The dentist theory, the Christopher Lee dentist is really what I forgot about until you just mentioned it.
There's more coming out from them for these Wonka stories with Netflix. So speaking of Netflix, it's a good time to drop this in here. They said that 72 million viewers, yeah, tuned in for Midnight Sky with, yeah, George Clooney.
Fuck right off with that.
I don't believe it for a second.
Across the world?
I guess.
I don't know.
So like,
they didn't even promote the movie on the site, though.
I think 72 million people hovered their mouse over the banner ad.
Yeah.
But what banner ad? Because maybe there was one day in December where I saw Midnight Sky as like even a suggestion on Netflix, and then it went right back to Cake Bake Off, British baking show.
Cake Bake Off.
The cake
That was the weirdest name show in history, Cake Bake Off.
The Cake Bakers of Wales, or whatever show that, you know, people actually tune in to watch.
The Cake Bakers of Wales.
Cake Bakers of Wales. The Welsh.
I just can't understand a word they're saying. It sounds like their mouth is full of marbles. I love to watch that.
Yeah, I hope Netflix continue. We talked about it before. I can't wait to see the Red Notice numbers, because they're going to really, like, they're at a dilemma right now, because this movie is the biggest thing they're ever going to do, and they really have to juice the numbers in proportion. But it's at a point where you're going to have to make a claim that says the equivalent in the entire population of the United States watched Red Notice.
Dude, like, they were one third the way there saying it with fucking Midnight Sky. They're going to have no problem going over the population of the U.S. That is going to be their heat check. They're going to be like, yeah, like 13 billion people watched Red Notice. And like, that's going to be the point where everyone's going to be like, ah, I don't know if I necessarily believe these numbers.
They just operate their own like cell phone engagement factory overseas somewhere. Yeah. That just has the racks of the cell phones watching shows to,
like, the Silicon Valley scene with, like, we're just like a fucking, like,
why are we
factory.
Doing this? They did that at first, and like, why don't we just make up the numbers?
Yeah.
Next topic is Snyder Cut. It feels like he made this decision because he's like, fuck, I feel like I'm not talking about them. I feel like they're not talking about it anymore. So he's like, yeah, it's just a movie now. Now it's just a 4-hour movie. Not gonna, like,
I need to get the click rate up on Vero.
I mean,
I love this, because this is like the Chad Zack Snyder versus the Virgin Joss Whedon. It's the Chad, like, makes 4-hour movie that spends all of the budget on Steppenwolf's armor. The Virgin cares about anything like pacing or whatever.
I'm kind of pissed, because I was looking forward to the almost episodic or miniseries format, and I'm curious why I did it, other than what Jeff was just saying, which is like, yeah, I want to get some Vero clicks up, I want to get Snyder Cut trending again. So I don't know, I'm curious to see the decision making process behind that.
I just don't look, if it was like a couple tweaks of the movie, then I'd get it. Because then, like, at that point, you've seen the movie, so do you really need it to be broken up into four parts? But like, if it's this many new things, I think the intrigue is there. I can't wait for Darkseid to be in it for like 10 seconds. Like, we just saw the whole thing in the clip. Like, yeah. I can already tell it's going to happen.
I mean, I'm loving the fact that they know that they can release any news about the Snyder Cut and it gets talked about. Like, yeah. you talk about like an unhealthy Pavlovian type training between a movie studio and its fans, or people interested in comic book movies, where, you know, Wonder Woman 84 came out and then people aren't talking about it anymore because it wasn't a good movie. And they're like, okay, yeah, by the way, Mighty Mouse is in the Snyder Cut Justice League.
Betty Boop will be making an appearance, and her long gams will be
there's an Aquaman Betty Boop sex scene that's
the animator studio rioted. They went on strike.
It's gonna be the Jeff Buckley version of Hallelujah.
No, it's gonna be Buck Cherry.
Hey, you're crazy, Boop. But you scoop so good, you're on top of Boop. Mm.
Oh no. And Olive looking on in the distance, wish that was me.
Dude, I love Buck Cherry, because they had that song, and then they had the other song. It was like, I love the cocaine. Love the cocaine.
And then they were like, what, best friends with Viva La Bam? And then they just like, I haven't heard of Buck Cherry in a long time since then. Like 2007 was like their heyday.
I don't know. Like, I'm sure they did cocaine, but like, their songwriting process was like, I wonder what it was like when Guns N' Roses was playing the Viper Pit back in 1989.
Oh, you know what I found out today while writing trivia? Do you know what Axl Rose is an anagram for? And this is on purpose. He chose this name because it's an anagram for another, a different two words.
What?
Oral sex.
I didn't know that.
So he made the coolest name in rock, Axl Rose, cooler by making it also an anagram for oral sex.
Hey, man. You know, whatever works for him, whatever. Best and brightest out of Lafayette, Indiana, right there, though.
Is he really?
I believe so.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah. Native son of Lafayette, Indiana.
Oh, okay. I was going to say something else. I only realized today that Mike Alstott went to Purdue.
Oh, really? Oh, he's a big time Purdue legend.
I didn't know that. The two football players I think of with Purdue, it's not correct to think this way, are Drew Brees and Nick Hardwick, because Nick Hardwick was on the Chargers, and I think was a freshman when Drew Brees was a senior or something, or maybe that's not right. I don't remember.
I think if you had to do a Mount Rushmore of Purdue football players in terms of like Purdue fans, it'd be Mike Alstott, Drew Brees, Rod Woodson for
Kyle
sure.
Wharton.
Probably Bob Greasy, just because he had more
undefeated season.
I think that would be it. But I think Mike Alstott would be on there just because he was like the last famous fullback.
Yeah, Lorenzo Neal, I guess technically
maybe,
but even then,
Alstott is like the definitive one though.
Yes, that's for sure.
I'd like to make a movie about that, just like the last fullback.
About fullbacks?
Yeah, just a movie about Mike Alstott where it's like, you're never going to make it in this league, kid. The fullback position's dying. You can't do it.
Promontory starts playing.
You're not fat and short enough. Who's the fat? Remember Mike Tolbert a few years ago?
Oh, yeah. You fucking bit your ass. I remember Mike Tolbert. He ruled.
I love Mike Tolbert.
That was literally Sam Richardson. In I think you should leave just going like, oh, certified chode on our hands. He's like 5'6", 280.
Perfect. Just the ideal form for a man.
Yes. The biggest legs. I loved Mike Tolbert.
Next thing before an ad read, Jurassic World Dominion. Colin Trevorrow says it's not just gonna wrap up
banana.
Not just gonna wrap up the sequel trilogy. It's going to wrap up the whole series. So it's going to tie into the beginning of the series.
Yeah.
Do you buy that though?
I don't know. I don't think Jurassic Park will ever die. I think it's a brand now. But they have other things like the Camp Cretaceous stuff that's on Netflix. They have their children's side of the Jurassic Park entertainment franchise. But I think it will wrap, like what he's saying, is going to like wrap up the stories, like Sam Neill's character and Laura Dern's. Like, yeah, like they're probably, you know, going to do this and never come back to Jurassic Park, because who would ever have thought we'd see them again in Jurassic Park? Like, that's the draw for this movie, right? Like, that's the only real reason anyone's excited for it.
I think in the sense that he said it, I think it would wrap up the first two trilogies, if you want to call it that. But I think there will definitely be more Jurassic Park sometime in the future, because it makes too much money. Anything in Hollywood that makes money, they will fucking suckle at that teat until it's dry.
I don't really remember what happened in The Lost World and then
you remember what happened in The Lost World because you talk about it all the fucking time. The one scene.
No, that was Fallen Kingdom, right?
Oh, never mind. I thought you said, confused the two.
No,
two movies.
No, Lost World was the direct sequel to JP1, and then there was the third one, and I don't remember what happened in those. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, I remember Jurassic Park 1 kind of wrapped up really neatly. So I'm like wondering, like, what they're really gonna tie into wrapping up the whole series here.
I don't remember JP2 having a ton to do. I remember it was what's his name, Vince Vaughn was in it for a little bit. I remember that it was what's the fucking scientist's name, Ian Malcolm, right?
Yeah, the
I blanked on his name too. I had to remember Gold.
Jeff Goldblum's character?
Jeff Goldblum's character.
Yeah, you had it. Yeah, it's Ian.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We just got Mandela affected.
I know. I almost said Bill Goldberg.
He was famously in Jurassic Park. Yeah.
Yeah. But Ian Malcolm, I think, like, it was his daughter and him got stuck there, and there was mercenaries or something. There was a PMC. There was a PMC movie, if I remember correctly, almost in the same sense that the first of the sequel trilogy was. And I think that Vince Vaughn had a part in it, if I don't recalling correctly. Pretty sure anyway. It was like skinny Vince Vaughn too, because it was 90s. It's when he was like super tall and like really shapely.
It's weird to see young Vince Vaughn. because he's always looked like middle-aged Vince Vaughn to me. But then seeing young Vince Vaughn, I'm like, he was young once upon a time.
It's weird. I like it.
Yeah. Though. Time to wrap up the series. You've got to slap that wrap it up button, Colin. You know, we had a good run. We had a Jurassic World, which was better than Jurassic Park 1 for 5 minutes for me.
Yeah,
and then
true.
A second movie that started exploring what people have always wanted out of Jurassic Park is telekinetic abilities.
Say the scene. Talk about the scene. I know you want to.
There just wasn't enough human cloning in the original.
Dinosaur MK Ultra.
It was kind of what it was. That poor dinosaur dying on the island trail. Roar, as the whole thing explodes.
They're just staring at it like, oh man, that dinosaur's dying.
That scene, nothing stuck with you more than that scene in that movie.
Yeah, because it was so unnecessary. Like, there's two unnecessarily cruel scenes that Colin Trevorrow put in these movies. The first one is that assistant just being gobbled by the water dinosaur dropped by a pterodactyl and then gobbled by the water dinosaur. And the second one is just the big brontosaurus, probably not a brontosaurus, but
she got like run through the tables like they were the Dudley Bros. She got picked up by the fucking pterodactyl. The pterodactyl tossed her to another pterodactyl, which dropped her, then picked her back up, then dropped her again out of the water, and then the water dinosaur killed her. It was so unnecessary.
You know who that was, right?
Yeah, it was some fuck. Who was it?
That's young Missy. I'm pretty sure it was Lauren Lapkus, right?
Lauren Lapkus, I think you.
Or did she survive? She's in that movie, but she was like one of the assistants.
So I think that this was Bryce Dallas Howard's assistant in the movie, and I think it was a different actress, but I think you're right in that Lauren Lapkus was in it.
She was definitely in it. Oh, you know what? I don't know. Maybe she did. She died or she worked with Jake Johnson.
And Jake Johnson worked together. And
okay, you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
His character. You remember his character's name? If you get his character's name, I will send you $100 right now.
Wasn't he kind of like low key horned up?
Oh yeah, too? No, nothing low key about it, partner.
I'm not remembering it.
His name. It's not very easy. I bet if you polled every American in the world, every American who saw this movie. 0.5% would remember his name.
Dude, Jake Johnson probably doesn't remember his name.
Lowry Cruthers.
Cruthers or Crothers?
Crothers?
I mean, Crothers I've heard before. Cruthers is Lowry.
Lowry Crothers. Classic all-American name.
Her name, Lauren Lopkins' name was Vivian.
Mm.
Who played the character that got killed then?
I think it was just like a random assistant, but I thought it was somebody, wasn't it? Because I remember you mentioned it before. Maybe it's just that we had thought previously.
Katie McCrath played Zara, the personal assistant.
Mm, okay. Who played Jimmy Buffett?
She died. Jim played himself. Great cameo.
That'd be a good shirt to sell for 5 minutes. Margaritaville, Jurassic World.
Yeah.
They sell one at Universal Studios. Sure they have it.
I want to go to Universal Studios when this pandemic's over.
You do?
Yeah, I want to go to those Islands of Adventure, man.
Okay.
They still got them.
I want to go to the Harry Potter world and just be like, this is just like the politics.
Here we go. Next ad read. Roman, back again. But actually, Roman sent something. If I recall, Ken Jack.
They send a read?
Yeah. So Roman sent us a little... So, like, you know how, like, a lot of movies obviously get tie-in, like, personal songs from artists that are interested in it? Like, you know, obviously, like, the Venom song from Eminem, a great example. They did the same thing for this News of the World, which you're reviewing later, except it was R.E.M. that made the song for this. So,
wow.
Roll clip.
R.E.M., unbelievable. Okay, here we go. This is from our good friends over at Roman.
It's great. We start with the Tom Hanks reading news to the blank staring eyes of the crowd. Well, look out now, cause here's a girl. She was German maybe once before. Gotta bring her back to her uncle and her aunt. Now they're under fire and the bad guys are all out of range. Kid has an idea, gonna shoot them with some pocket change. Before they could get too far, they get into another spar, held up by a bunch of guys wanting him to spread their lies. At gunpoint he can't decline, but later on he changed his mind. He told the truth to the youths and escaped in the nick of time. That's the movie so far. It's not done yet. It's the news of the world. Yeah, you know it. It's the
news of the world.
Yeah, you know it. It's the news of the world. Yeah, you know it. And it's just fine. It's like, okay, I guess, right? Not bad. They continue down the path. It looks like they really need a bath. The dust goes up, it starts to churn. They lose each other in the storm. They find each other with the force. Someone gives them a brand new horse. Their journey winds down to an end, finding her old aunt from the Deutschland. But they kind of just don't want her, so Tom Hanks just takes her? It's the news of the world. Yeah, you know it. It's the news of the world, yeah, you know it. It's the news of the world, yeah, you know it. And it's just fine.
Yeah, you guys liked it, right? It's pretty good. Not great, but it's pretty good, I guess.
Oh, my God.
There you go.
Good unbelievable job. That they shared our almost, well, we'll see, maybe our same sentiment on the movie.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's, you know, Michael Stipe, he sounded better than ever.
It sounds like he really tried to make sure that his voice matched his original quality while he was recording this.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Very good.
Oh, my God. Great stuff from REM and from Roman, who right now, if you go to getroman.com/light, you get $5 for only for $5 at your first month of swipes. For just $5 at GetRoman.com/lights. Roman swipes are a clinically proven way to last longer in bed, effective, easy to use, fast acting, as we always said. Roman can ship them in discreet packaging too, unmarked. That way, if for some reason you'd be embarrassed, you wouldn't be embarrassed. Very discreet. Super easy to use. Take the swipe out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry. You're good to go. Go to GetRoman.com/lights for $5 for the first month. Fantastic deal. A couple more pieces of news here. The next thing on the docket, Liam Neeson saying he may retire from action movies after doing a couple more.
He fucking said that. He fucking said that like 2 years ago, remember?
But it's also like, not to like age shame Liam Neeson. He's in his like 70s. It's like, that's not like the most shocking. Like, I'm not blown away by that. Like, that's not like if Tom Cruise said that, I'd be surprised. If Chris Hemsworth said that, I'd be stunned. But like, yeah, okay. Yeah.
It would make sense, but we're getting the farewell tour though. That's a move. That's what all the bands do.
He shows up at every theater after the screenings for a standing ovation. Just
I know you all liked my
every
movie.
Theater retires his number, gives him a gift.
Did they do a Taken 4? Or were we just on 3?
They did a Taken 3, but then the show.
Okay.
And what's the more recent? I haven't watched the most recent one he did, The Marksman or wherever. Right.
I just watched that today.
Hi, I'm a Marine sniper, and my accent is definitely not weird.
We'll be reviewing that in the next couple weeks.
Remember The Commuter, the movie where he commutes?
How can we forget that?
Vera Famiglia.
That was the first movie I think we watched of 2019,
I would guess.
Really?
We reviewed it with Robbie Fox. Robbie Fox accidentally bought a handicap seat, and so he felt weird and stood up in the back of the theater the entire time.
That's right.
He's a gentleman, though. For that, mm-hmm. It's noble.
Good lad.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Liam Neeson's doing the whole thing smokers do when they quit. It's like, I'm gonna quit, but I'm gonna have a few more packs, and then just keep pushing the timeline down the road. You eventually quit, but a couple more. I know that the definition two, but I could see him doing 4 or 5 more before he just hangs.
But then someone's gonna come down the line, like 3 years from now, and make like a quote unquote high class Expendables movie. That just gets all the action stars back together again for one last hurrah, and he's 100% going to be in that.
I would love to see him in John Wick. I said I would love to see Tom Cruise as the bad guy in John Wick, to have him back like you know, doing the collateral bad guy thing again. Like, maybe not that exact character, but Tom Cruise can play a fantastic bad guy. I'd love to see him just a fucking psychopath in John Wick. But I think Liam Neeson would be good too. It might be, you know, but his vibe might be too close to the bad guy from the first one. So who knows?
Tom Cruise as Vincent in Collateral and Tom Cruise as Lestat in Interview with the Vampire. Incredible bad guys. Two of the best bad guy performances I could think of off the top of my head. And he just, they won't let him do bad guy roles anymore. The forces who won't be named.
Lestat's only good because that movie's so fucking over the top.
But dude, he's legitimately good at being a bad guy in that.
Well, yeah, he's good at being a weirdo in these movies.
Man, I loved Vincent too so much. That whole movie is great. Was it Michael Mann, right, that did Collateral? Man, fuck, yep. I gotta rewatch that. Such a good movie. But point is, Liam Neeson is definitely gonna come back and do more action movies. As long as he can stand.
He said he'll do a few more action movies. I would just love to see him get tied into one of the bigger, I know we talked about John Wick, but also like I want to see him involved in something that's not like the janitor, the revenge of the janitor.
I know exactly what you mean. Not like just like garbage.
Yeah. Like, let's do something with like rewatchability, something fun, Mission Impossible. I don't know. Like, I know we only have like two action franchises I can think of off the top of my head right now. But
you think it's ever been like you want to watch a movie tonight? It's like, yo, bro, have you seen The Commuter? Dude, movie slaps.
All right.
Got to check it out.
Yo, okay. So 9 minutes into the movie, he gets on the B train. And then he stays on that for about 45 minutes. And he gets off and takes the C train back.
Oh. Triple feature Liam Neeson, The Commuter, Cold Pursuit, and Schindler's List. All three bangers.
The Commuter video game where your entire thing is just commuting home and commuting to work.
Nicole Kidman gonna possibly play Lucille Ball in the Aaron Sorkin Lucille Ball biopic.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of different. It's kind of different for Nicole Kidman, right?
Yeah, and it's obviously, that seems like a thing that Sorkin would be fired up about.
Oh yeah. No, he's going to be settled in the course of narrow pupiled right now writing that.
It's apparently going to be very dialogue heavy, very similar to Steve Jobs, where it's set of the course of just a couple days, like a couple production days. I like that. I think it's a cool concept. It worked for Jobs. Some people hated it, though. Some people were like, that's a boring-ass movie. I love Sorkin, so I think we all enjoyed it to an extent. But yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting – I think that clearly is a way that works for him, and I think we liked that movie. Like, I liked – Trial of Chicago 7. It's one of the better movies of the year for sure, but I didn't quite like it as much as his best work. And I think this suits a little more to what I want to see from him. So I like the idea.
I think the subject matter, I think Lucille Ball is a fascinating person from the standpoint of, you know, her place in entertainment. And that's more interesting to me, I guess, to like get Aaron Sorkin's take on that. I guess where I'm coming from is like, I like when guys like Aaron Sorkin get really dorky and fired up by this nostalgia shit they grew up with. Cause like, I understand it. Like, I get hyped up by the 80s and the 90s. And I can only imagine that feeling multiplies when you're 65 and you want to make a movie about the stuff you watched growing up or whatnot. And so like, I think like that perspective on it, that's a lot more interesting to me than his kind of like revision on historical events.
Yes.
You know, like the movie we just saw, which I don't know. I mean, we talked about it. I don't know how much of a revision, but like, some of the court scene was like, yeah, you know, all that stuff was like played up. But this one actually interests me. I'll say some more.
Me too, to the sense that like, I don't know enough about Lucille Ball going into it. I'm going to make sure it stays that way. Like, I'm not going to Google her or anything like that, or try and make read ahead of that, because I want to know more about it from this more, I'm assuming, theatrical sense of view that he's going to give it to us.
I like the idea. I like the concept.
I mean, she was the first woman to run a TV studio, like, and so like her kind of place in entertainment goes, you know, her legacy is I Love Lucy, right, and kind of her comedic acting in that show. But I think the story and the angle here is how she basically was a trailblazer for this, you know, in the 60s, early 60s, for changes in the entertainment industry that still are needing to happen today. I don't know.
So the last thing here after that, Alan Tudyk apparently not returning as K2SO. So I think we're interviewing Alan Tudyk next week, actually. We'll get a little more info on this from him, but which I'm kind of surprised because am I misremembering Rogue One? Wasn't he like very much the sidekick of Cassian Andor?
He was like an Imperial Protocol droid, right? So I guess they maybe only just recently had captured him. I don't know.
I guess maybe this is a ways before, but I felt like they really had a good connection.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's kind of surprising.
And he was one of the funnier, obviously, with purpose, like the funnier parts of that movie. So I don't know.
They're shooting right now. I'm not in it. But if it stays on the air, if stories keep getting told, it'll end up there. I'm going to be in the show. It's just that the story that they're telling doesn't involve him till later on. All right. So I get that. I actually, from what I understood, I thought this was only going to be a one-off.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
But the production value is very high on this and the sets are crazy. So I guess the idea is that if people like it, why not make more? Because you can just keep making more cool, like underground rebel shit. Like no one's going to say no to that if it's good. So just kind of surprised he's not in the first one because he was definitely like people like Rogue One. And I mean, there's some people who fucking think Rogue One's the best movie that's been out since the originals. But he was one of the characters people liked the most. Alan Tudyk coming up soon on LCP.
We interviewed now, or we're going to have interviewed two people from A Knight's Tale. Obviously, won't be able to interview one of them, but the other one is he's around somewhere.
That's our goal, to interview as many people from that movie as possible.
The other guy from The Full Monty, he's a good actor. He played Robert Baratheon. I forget his name though, off the top of my head. I think it's Bill.
All right. Well, let's talk about news of the world. Last really big major blockbuster release for 2020 has had Oscar hype for a while, directed by Paul Greengrass. I just always laugh at that name. He looks like a Paul Greengrass too. He's done a ton of things over the years. Most recently with Tom Hanks did Captain Phillips, a movie that I quite like. He did the Bourne movies. What else? Resurrected, the one that got away. Just kind of reading down his list of movies. Again, Bourne movies are probably the ones that I'd say most known for, though Captain Phillips was pretty fucking good. I was a big fan of Captain Phillips. We're going to talk about Captain Phillips a little bit here. At least I am, relevant to this movie. Based on a novel, a book that came out like 4 years ago, which I was stunned by that. I don't know why. News of the World, when I saw this movie come out, I'm like, oh, that's based off that really old book.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. This is from 4 years ago. I thought this was like a really old book that people like you'd read The Great Gatsby, War of the Worlds, The News of the World. But no, it's a recent book. 5 years after the end of the Civil War, Captain Jefferson Kyle Kidd crosses paths with a 10-year-old girl taken by the Kiowa people, forced to return to her aunt and uncle. Kidd agrees to escort the child across the harsh and unforgiving plains of Texas. However, the long journey soon turns into a fight for survival as the traveling companions encounter danger at every turn, both human and natural. That is an exciting synopsis.
Did they execute upon that?
We will see.
Can I say something?
Yes. I will let you start and give your score too.
Well, I wanted to make a general comment. I wanted to talk about a discussion, right? It would be interesting to talk about the movies that were affected most in terms of like when they decided to green light and what they thought they were going to make versus the pandemic happening and them not being able to release in theaters. I don't think this movie was affected the most. Obviously, you know, we'll see what happens with some of the bigger name movies. If there's more of an effect on that, like Tenet, obviously, was a big one, but this movie had to be hit pretty hard because this had to be the Christmas movie, right? This had to be the Christmas movie that everybody on Christmas with their seven people in their family or the eight people in their family or anyone who has a tradition on Christmas to go to the movies and see would go to see News of the World. This was the Christmas movie that you would see with your family. That's all I wanted to say. It's you want me to go into
your thoughts? Yeah. Okay. I'll let you take the floor.
I'll transition into that. The reason this is the Christmas movie is because it the entire movie exists on a plane where it requires you to acknowledge that Tom Cruise is dad. Tom Cruise is daddy. No, Tom Hanks is dad. So Tom Hanks, his public perception plays so heavily in this movie in terms of just being, you know, a beloved actor of, you know, an older age and kind of just a very friendly older man. And then having associations with his celebrity in terms of like he's doing something with like the I was watching the news of the inauguration night in terms of like uniting America. Like, I think he's a person people genuinely trust across the board, unless he's involved in a conspiracy theory where he's been detained and then executed and replaced with a clone. But part of this movie is they could not execute upon this movie because so much of it's invested in your own investment in Tom Hanks playing this guardian or this protector to this girl, and kind of the warm and fuzziness of the Hanks seeps through to the character that as I was watching it, I'm like, I'm enjoying this, but this just feels like something that like if Tom Hanks said no to this, I don't know a single person that would play in this role because so much of this movie just rides on him being Tom Hanks. And he does a fine job. And the girl actress does a fine job. And it's an okay movie. I give it about a 70. It's not very interesting. It's entertaining, but it's not interesting. There's nothing that really gets your brain to work, but you know, a lot of it is just based upon it being that Christmas movie and having that like emotional arc of Tom Hanks, you know, the pairing between a gruff old man and a little girl and the, you know, old man's heart being, you know, warmed over by the little girl and then having a happy ending to it. And like, honestly, most of this movie just felt like it was the Hanks movie, and that's fine. That's what it was. I don't think it intended to be anything more is the thing.
Yeah, I'm not that far off from you. I gave it a 76. It has the makings of a movie that I would think would be good, if that makes complete sense. Like, this is, it feels like a movie, and it looks the part. It definitely looks the part. And there are some moments that I found interesting and engaging. Like, it's a well-made movie, technically, for sure. But man, it's just boring. Like, it's just boring. It feels very like dry, just a very dry movie with little personality and no real emotional punch or landing. And I'll tell you what, spoiler alert right here. What the fuck was the ending of that movie? I wrote in my blog, I said the movie was very predictable and you could just see all the beats as they were happening, but like I really thought the movie, I didn't know how it was going to end, but I was like, all right, well, it's going to land here, it's all going to tie together. But it just ended with them reading the news, which I guess is news of the, like,
this is the world, baby.
It just didn't it ended with such a flat note. I was like, that was the most shocking part of the movie to me. I was like, what the fuck? That's it. It's over.
Didn't really have anywhere to go though.
Like, exactly. It never like, what was the point? That was my thing. I was like, what was the point of any of that?
I would be real interested to see, I mean, to read the synopsis in the book, because I think it's one of those things where like movies, obviously long history between movies and books, long history of people saying the book was better than the movie. Short history of people saying the movie is better than the book, but there are a lot of stories that just inherently work better in a book because you have more space, you have more real estate for characterization. And the issue here is that you just like, you kind of knew who the character was, the Captain Jefferson Kyle Kid. You knew who he was. You know how you knew who he was? You know how you knew what his character was? Because Tom Hanks was playing him.
True.
Like that's like how you know, like that's the characterization. You get the picture of the dead wife and all that. But like the characterization is done via Tom Hanks being associated with the role because of what Tom Hanks is. No knock on Tom Hanks, but that's just like, you know, you kind of go in, oh, look, you know, he's a noble guy. He's dressing up to read the news. Like, you know, probably has like some a demon or two. And then the book, you know, maybe you had more to run with it because you had someone who lived through a war, probably saw a lot of fucked up shit. And there probably was more to that character than just like what we saw in the movie. But it was fine for the movie because all this really needed to be was a movie you go in, you watch with your family, and your dad comes out of it, and your dad says, that was pretty good. And then mm-hmm. nobody ever talks about it ever again. It executed on that Christmas movie tradition of being just that.
I got a good kick out of one review I read on Rotten Tomatoes, and I'll let you go, Ken Jack. The somebody said that calling this a dad movie is offensive to dad movies. I don't even think it's that terrible. It's so above average.
So I think that what Troll said in that dads would like this movie is completely correct, but I also wouldn't classify it necessarily as a dad movie.
Oh, that's okay. I like that.
It's not a dad movie because the Jefferson Kyle kid isn't enough of a bastard to have a dad movie-esque redemption arc.
Mm-hmm. He's a one-dimensional flat character, which is, I think, to me, one of the problems I had with this movie. And I think, Jeff, I think you nailed it on the head, because like my overarching thought on this movie is that the pieces of it are there for what should be a pretty good movie. You know, it's good performances. There's a newcomer that does really, really well, which is always shocking, great. And set pieces are there. The soundtrack is awesome. The soundtrack is really, really good and matches like that old West scenery, which we like love to see on cinema. And I think it's just not interesting. And I have the same problem that both of you guys have. It's just not interesting. And I think the Hanks bears the weight. Right. Like you go to this movie because, like Tro said, you want to see Tom Hanks, and Tom Hanks is just playing Tom Hanks, which is kind of my problem with it as well, is just that his character is just like this infallible guy with an immovable moral compass. And like that's a staple of old timey Westerns. That's fine. But like if you're trying to go for this old, dreary style Western, because like, you know, the old Westerns that like from the 60s and 70s and 50s, like, those were like action adventure stories, right? This isn't that. This is like hopeless, dreary old West. Everyone's sad because it's like, you know, antebellum period and all that. And you just can't have a character that's this, you know, like one dimensional good guy as Tom Hanks was. And it really, it just needed more intrigue. And on a technical side, I agree with what you said, Jeff, and that it's gorgeous. It's great. It's just, and I also am very impressed with what Greengrass did, just because I'm so used to with him anyway shooting with like that shaky cam style with action and all that, and you still kind of see it in this, but like it's a little bit more traditional, which I was impressed by him with. And another impressive part was just that Helena Zagel, who played the child in this, I think was awesome. And you know, kid actors, I always walk into any movie with a kid actor, and I think this, like, basically what you're hoping for is for them to not fuck up, right? Like, that's your best expectation, is don't drag the movie down, because like you're a kid and like you don't want to put too much like pressure on them or anything. Like, that's just the nature of the beast. But she was really, really good. And I think she acted to the level of Hanks, which was amazing. But it's just, it needed a level of intrigue that wasn't there. It was just so flat. And that flatness of the storyline against the sort of dreary and drab atmosphere of the sort of setting that they gave and set up, it was just, it needed something. It really just, it was missing like a soul. You know what I mean? I really wanted something more out of this and didn't get it. I still gave it an 80, which now the more I'm thinking about it, I'm just mad about it because of those, just like the potential was there, but I still want to give it an 80
there.
Because on the technical side, it's just, it's great. And I did really like the acting. Like I think Hanks's character is flat, but he acted the character to the best of his ability.
Just too many boring stretches. Like, I didn't find myself wanting to turn it off at any point, but like, I wasn't pumped about watching them. Like,
after the first act, I was pretty in, and then after that first act, it really just goes down.
Well, the scene that got me, like, when it started, was like, oh man, like, out of the first act is when like she escaped. I was like, of course she escaped.
Yeah.
And it always seems like that's the tension you got to have in the first act for these like old man pairings with the child that teaches them about life or whatever. But yeah, you know, like I said, the movie made you feel good, right? Like, I watched it and I felt good at the end. Like, I enjoyed it because I enjoyed Tom Hanks, and I liked watching something like somewhat heartwarming happen on screen after watching Promising Young Woman. And it was enjoyable from like a schmaltzy point of view, which, you know, was kind of what they're going for. But then, like you're saying, so you're watching it and like, it looks great. They nailed all the costumes. Tom Hanks's jacket looks really neat. Like, all this shit looks cool. Like, you spent all this money making this like 19 or 1870 setting, and then you just didn't wrap anything around it. And it's just disappointing from that perspective. But I also have to say, like, my expectations were pretty, like, this movie met my expectations. And I think it probably met our expectations. So it wasn't a surprise. It just kind of, it was exactly what I thought it was going to be based upon the previews, which is okay. It's good. At least they made a movie that matched up to the expectations I had from watching the trailers.
There's just no, unfortunately, and this one's based, that was based on a true story, but there's not enough thrilling emotional moments. Like, fucking Captain Phillips was an emotional thrill ride. Like, that movie was fucking tense and you knew it was going to happen. So It doesn't even take it not being, like, I don't want to say predictable, but it doesn't take, like, not knowing it's going to happen. Like, if you knew the story, it was still an exciting movie. This thing just didn't have enough of those moments. I didn't connect on any emotional level. It didn't feel like an experience, which is, we also wrote our review on Promising Young Woman today. And that's what I said, like, Promising Young Woman, like, emotionally engaging, and it was an experience. That's what I look for in movies more than anything. I want to experience the thrill of what's happening, whether that is actual thrills or dramatic thrills. This one, again, it's very well made. I didn't hate watching it, but I was like, man, a couple parts fucking bored me to tears. It's incredibly above average. And it's funny, because, like, I feel like if you're someone who may not watch as many movies as we do in a year, where we watch slop and garbage that nobody should ever watch, you may view this a lot lower than we did. That's kind of like in comparison to some things we've seen, it's not that bad. And we've seen some bad movies this year, but it's still nowhere near where the pre-release hype was, like, putting around the Oscars. Though I'll say this, we're talking about it as if it doesn't have good marks on Rotten Tomatoes from critics and audiences, because it does.
Okay, so, it got good marks from us too, though.
Yeah, but I don't think
we're talking about it in a generally negative tone, but I think it's mostly just because of we're disappointed in that, and just like
I think we're right below the average sentiment. I think people like it a little more than I think we like it.
That's fair. What's the like average, the rating?
87% and 89%.
But is that like, what, isn't there like 1 out of 10 that's like adjusted to actually have the rating?
Oh yeah. That's kind of the main score. It would be 7.5, but the audience, it's 4.4.
I mean, it's got an audience score of 4.4 on Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah.
Damn.
I like how you mentioned Captain Phillips, because that's a movie where, like, at the end of that movie, I was like tearing up because there was such an emotional release towards the end of that. And I think that just from a pacing perspective, maybe Greengrass thought that's what, like, him just walking away with her from the German homestead was going to give, and just, it didn't give us that. Like, that, there was no real emotional climax to this movie, which is just, you know what I mean? Got blue balled by Tom Hanks.
Yep. I thought we'd get it at the end too. We really did.
He just walks the new scene where she's clamping or like smacking down the hammer thing. Like, hear you. Let's hear some news of the world, which he says the title of the movie. I want to say like three words into the entire movie, right? Like the opens up, yeah, with, like, him reading the news.
Yeah, but you got to get that one out of the way, because you know he's going to do it. You can't have a title like News of the World and then not say it.
Dude, you know a movie did that very recently was Outside the Wire, the movie we interviewed Anthony Mackie for. They say the phrase Outside the Wire like 18 times. And like, I didn't like it at first, but like as it got on to like the ridiculous zone, I liked it more. Like the looks amount of times they said it.
Looks like this one's Outside the Wire.
We're going outside the wire. And then like 5 seconds later on the radio, hello, we are currently outside the wire. It was amazing. I loved it. Not the necessarily movie, just that aspect.
What else? I think that's it for News of the World. I don't have much more to say about it.
Let's talk about, you know, to be fair, let's talk about the Queen album News of the World. Queen album News of the World is I don't know. I don't know where it sits in the Queen canon in terms of the reception, but it's got We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions and Sheer Heart Attack on it, which is pretty good. Those are good songs.
I would say very good.
Yeah, but you know, it's pretty front loaded. Everything that happens after that's not as good. But there's a Family Guy episode that the B plot's based off of Stewie being afraid of this Queen News of the World album cover.
I don't remember that at all.
Oh, no, he's terrified of the album cover, which has a, I don't know if it's a gigantic robot or a gigantic stone golem, but It's creepy looking. So I get it.
Yeah, I absolutely do not remember that. Not in the least bit. News of the world.
In 2012, the TV show Family Guy dedicated an episode plotline to the album cover. Seth MacFarlane stated that it was based on his own fear of the cover when he was a child. I would have put $1 million on that. That's too specific.
Yeah, that's an incredibly specific thing to have for it to not be from Seth MacFarlane's childhood. 70 from Trillball and 76 from me, 80 from Ken Jack. Our audience gave it an 84. There you go. Top 10 movies of 2020. So we'll rattle off your 10 through 6, and then we'll go into our top five, which we usually list here, are a little similar. You can find these on movierankings.net too for myself and Ken Jack, our full ratings. Let's start it out. Well, Ken Jack, we'll go with you. 10 through 6.
Okay, my 10 through 6, my number 10, and I took some time to think about this because I like it more in retrospect, and only because I recently was been talking with people in the office about it who had recently seen it. It's The Gentlemen, the Guy Ritchie movie, The Gentlemen. I watched it again recently, and I like it so much more than I originally liked it, which was still already pretty high. It's just, it's such a return to form for Guy Ritchie to crime comedy. It's quick, it's snappy, it's funny, it's got great action, a great plot that's just like interweaving and with a million kinetic moving parts, which is so Guy Ritchie, and I really like that movie. So it's a number 10 for me.
10 through 6, keep going, yeah.
10 through 6, yeah. So number 9 is going to be King of Staten Island. We ranted a lot about that movie. It's really, really good. Bill Burr is amazing. Pete Davidson didn't really – we saw some stuff from him that we never thought he had in him, which is awesome. Number 8, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. It's incredible seeing a play brought to life on screen that seamlessly. Number 7, Promising Young Woman. Just talked about it nonstop, so I don't want to go too heavily on it. Number 6, Palm Springs. That feels like we watched that like a millennia ago, but it's so funny, man. And I think like we talked about it in the review, like it is so, I can't even imagine how hard it is to try and make one of those time loop type scenario movies funny now. And it just is. It's so, it was seamlessly funny and amazing, amazing, amazing movie from this year.
All right. There's your 10 through 6. I'll fire mine off. Trial of Chicago 7, number 10 for me, 90 out of 100. I mentioned it earlier. Great writing from Aaron Sorkin. I don't think his best, but pretty damn fucking good and compelling story, especially one that, you know, again, when true stories are nailed and are compelling on their own right, because I always am an idiot and look up the story beforehand, it does say a lot. So that is for sure my number 10 at 90 out of 100, 91 out of 100. Number 9, Tenet. We went fairly at length with Tenet. And is for as much as Tenet gets more and more shit every day, people kind of crap all over Tenet now. I still love it. It is incredibly complex, probably to a fault. I don't know. I happen to just enjoy that. When no one has the big spectacles and time stuff, it kind of blows my mind. And again, it's an experience, it's a thrill ride. So 91 out of 100 for me. 91 out of 100, this is one we have not talked about, but we will talk about it on Sunday when we do some movie catch-ups. That's The Father with Anthony Hopkins and Olivia Colman. Really good movie. I think might be on Ken Jack's list, so I won't say anything else on that one. 7, 92 out of 100. Soul, Pixar for me, their best movie of the year. They had a rare two releases. I really enjoyed Soul. Just a feel-good, uplifting, kind of like movie that tries to inspire. Did something different, an adult movie from them. And just quite enjoyed it. You can check. If you missed any of these reviews, by the way, this is one we just reviewed recently. I love Soul. Rewatchable too. I actually watched Soul twice. Very much enjoyed it. And then Five Bloods from Spike Lee. Which that one feels like we reviewed. I when did that come out? I feel like we fucking reviewed that like eight months ago.
March?
Yeah, so almost a year ago.
Maybe March. I don't know.
It was early on, I believe, in the pandemic. But yeah, Five Bloods was powerful. Obviously timely, but I think one that's going to hold up far beyond when it was released. Some incredible acting. Delroy Lindo probably get an Oscar nomination, but I really enjoyed The Five Bloods. A surprising release from Spike Lee. Not that I'm surprised he made a good movie, but just some things happened with that really kind of caught you off guard in a good way. So The Five Bloods, 92 out of 100 for me, number 6. Trill, 10 through 6.
It was June, by the way. Time had no value in.
Yeah,
it was released in June. All right, number 10 for me, Miss Americana, the Taylor Swift documentary. Here's the thing. I thought it was great. I don't know how manufactured it was. I thought it was a turning point in Taylor's career, because I think the perception on Taylor Swift changed a lot this year with her two new albums. I think people have gone from associating her with like the Kanye West thing and everything in the last couple of years to being very talented, which is kind of where she wants to be. And I think this movie showed that side of her and was actually very well made for a documentary. Nine Invisible Man, AKA the last movie I've ever seen in theaters to this day. Way better than we thought going in. And then number eight was Soul, which I think I missed the review on this, but here's my review now. I loved it. Thought it was beautiful. Very beautiful, in fact. Probably not Coco level beautiful, but still pretty amazing. Way better than Onward, if we're rating Pixar movies this year. And then seven for me is David Byrne's American Utopia, which I think was on HBO Max. It was on one of the streaming services. It's essentially a live concert documentary type thing with bunch of his songs, but the performances were great. And it's just an overall beautiful show. And then number six was Small Axe Lovers Rock, which was part of the Steve McQueen Small Axe series. Probably my favorite of the bunch was this one, which is why it's on the list.
Small Axe, yeah. It's good to have a little variation on there.
I cheated on the podcast and watched some of these Miss Americana, Small Axe, and didn't tell you guys.
How could you?
Fucked around.
Audience 10 through 6, The Gentleman, number 10, just like Ken Jack. Number 9, Tenet. Number 8, Onward. Onward sneaks in there. Trial of Chicago 7 at 7, and then King of Staten Island at 6. Ken Jack, number 5.
My number 5 movie is one you just mentioned a second ago. It's The Father. I think it's coming to streaming later this month on Prime. If you're not familiar with just the concept, the story revolves around Anthony Hopkins, who's this guy who's fighting against his dementia, and he's losing. And it really puts you into his shoes and makes you feel like his struggle against his own mind and his grip on reality. And Anthony Hopkins kills it. I think it's maybe like one of the best, if not the best, not the best, but it's one of his best performances I've ever seen from him. And you feel him like fighting to like recover his memories and like realizing that those memories like aren't happy ones. And it's brilliant. And it's also an adaptation of the play, and the director of the play directed the movie. And he has this like sort of like brilliant sense of how to bring it to screen. And it reminds me a lot of Ma Rainey's Black Bottom in that sense, that like you really get this theatrical sort of sensibility to it. And it's just a devastating ending, dude. Like Anthony Hopkins and Olivia Colman kill it so bad. Like the closing 20 minutes of that movie, I was like a puddle, an absolute puddle. It's so good.
Yeah, no, The Father is one that, again, we'll talk about further this coming Sunday. Trey, I'm not sure if you've seen it, but definitely a watch. I think one worth watching before we do our big review. It is pretty fucking good. I will say that. I was surprised by it. I didn't think it was going to be – I thought it was going to be good. It didn't be that good. Number five for me is – I would say this would battle another movie for my favorite of the year, and that is a 92 out of 100. That's King of Staten Island. Not Apatow's best, but pretty fucking close. I don't know what it was that it stuck with me so much. Like, I guess this was a while ago as well. It just seems like forever ago. It's July, I think, maybe. But I thought Pete Davidson just crushed his performance. But beyond that, Bill Burr was excellent. Marissa Tomei, it was so grounded in reality and just felt down to earth and relatable in ways that were kind of, I guess, sad and depressing at times, but also had uplifting moments. Like, it was just such a raw, cool look at what Pete Davidson's life was, kind of in an altered way, but one that is different because it was kind of like if he had not become, obviously, this star. We talked to Judd Apatow about it. You go back and check our interview. But The King of Staten Island, for me, it stuck with me all year. I was glad to see it finish in my top. By the way, I will note one thing. On our website, we'll change this. Many people have noted Portrait of a Lady on Fire is a movie reviewed in 2020. That would have been my number one. We're going to drop it back into 2019 because many have pointed out that it did release very, very small release in the U.S., in 2019. So it is a 2019 movie, but that would have been number one for me. But I'm happy to see King of Staten Island land in my top five. Cause I don't adjust the ratings for that to happen, but glad it ended up there. Cause it was definitely one of my two favorites of the year. So that's my number five. Trill, number five for you.
Number five for me is Palm Springs.
I thought that would be number one, but go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Number one for me.
Mm-hmm. No, I've already said what my number one was going to be. You guys know what it is.
I know, but I just, That was my prediction, but yes.
Yeah, I love. I thought Palm Springs, that is very, that there's great chemistry between the leads. And I thought there was poignancy that was wrapped around a lot of good comedy as well, like the J.K. Simmons character and everything else. But the movie also had like a very, you know, made you think, made you think, made your idiot brain work. Which I enjoy. So it's number five.
It's nice when it makes when they make your idiot brain work.
I like when my idiot brain works sometimes.
Yeah. Audience number five is The Five Bloods.
My number four is also The Five Bloods. For a lot of the reasons like you guys were talking about before, I think it's amazing. It's a suspenseful, it's heartwarming and heartbreaking. I think it features what is the single best performance of the year from Delroy Lindo. Like his Shakespearean type monologue scene is amazing. It's so fucking good. And plus it's just, it's a brilliant send off from Bozeman as well. Who like I have only net look on that performance now more positively, obviously knowing what we know about him fighting his cancer throughout that filming process, which is really honestly amazing. So that's number four for me.
That's a great number four, obviously on my list as well. That's another one that is so accessible. I hope more people watch, and I think it got good amount of buzz. I hope it catches more buzz when award season rolls out, and I hope more people watch it. That's your number four. My number four is a 93 out of 100, a movie we reviewed recently. I would say surprise of the year. Is it a surprise if I didn't really know we were getting it? I don't know. Maybe not. Sound of Metal. Sound of Metal with Riz Ahmed. Speaking of people from Rogue One, Sound of Metal was a fucking heart-wrenching movie. You want to talk about a raw and real look at something? That movie really fucking tugged on the old heartstrings, tears. It was an incredibly personal story. You felt the emotional pull in that one, and just so fucking well done, especially with sound editing, sound mixing, the way it looked, like kind of that like gritty or grainy look to the movie. It just played so perfectly into the story. And again, Amazon Prime, just like The Five Bloods on Netflix. This is an easy watch. You got Prime, no rental there. But yeah, Sound of Metal for me, number four, 93 out of 100. Trill for you, number four.
For me, it's another round. The movie that's probably on your guys' lists, but a beautiful, somewhat sad, but yet bittersweet, but sweet at the end, sort of movie with great performances and. Another side of Mads Mikkelsen that, you know, you don't see when you are used to watching him remove the bottom of a chair and then beat Daniel Craig's ball sack with a belt or whatever, or paddle. I don't remember.
Oh, God.
He does like, yeah, he likes whacking James Bond's balls with the big rope paddle. Was it which is a rope,
it's
right?
It's like a ball on a rope, right? Was it just like a literal thick rope? Not like really. The thick row. Well, Daniel Craig's not shooting thick ropes anymore after he got his nuts smashed.
Definitely not. Definitely won't be. audience number four is Soul. Kenjack, number three, best movie of 2020.
My number three was Trills just said it. It's another round. I think he hit the nail on the head as far as the bittersweet aspect of it. I really enjoyed getting that look into like that Danish drinking culture. I loved like the sort of gender. I said it again, gender fluidity. I remember I said this the last time we reviewed it too. The genre fluidity of the movie is very, very, yes, very different things. I really love that aspect about the movie, and I love the ending. I think Mads Mikkelsen killed it as well as the supporting cast, and it's just. It leaves you with such a feeling that's hard to like describe, and like for a movie to make you feel anything is like a win, but for a movie to make you like not understand how you're feeling is another level of success, in my opinion.
Absolutely agree. My number three is one you mentioned, Promising You a Woman, 94 out of 100 for me, in a tie for second, breaks the tie a little bit because the other one I have above it, I did like a little more. Promising Young Woman is. Probably the craziest emotional ride of the year out of any movie. Just fucking pure insanity. The genre mixing in that one was insane. It was nuts. It was, I think, Trill, you said it just kind of tosses you around the entire movie. And Carey Mulligan, probably the best performance of the year, in terms of acting, in terms of an actress. I think she'll, we'll see. Francis McDormand is going to probably win for Nomadland. Nomadland, not a movie in my top 10, which I didn't hate Nomadland. It was pretty solid, but I wish Carey Mulligan would win for this because I think she wore many different hats for the character, even though she played the same character. She was able to kind of adjust to how the story was being told and what element. It was a fantastic performance. I wish she would win for it.
There's going to be like a genre bias against her winning the award. You know, just in terms of this movie, like being many different things, but also not like fitting that mold of just like straight up, you know, Oscar bait type material. I mean, exactly. What I'm trying to say is this movie was too interesting for the old fucks in the Academy to want to.
It was too much for them to handle. Yes, I agree. Trill, your number three. Excuse me.
Defy Bloods is my number three. Second favorite performance of the year, like you said, for me. The first one's coming up, my number one movie. But the movie, like a lot of these, was especially poignant. It for a lot of different reasons, like you mentioned. One was Chadwick Boseman, but also for kind of, you know, when it came about this year and the subject matter it touched on, and the way the story was told, and also, like, you know, I did also like the end and kind of how everything crescendoed in the movie as well. So, you know, not only what I had to say, but it was Spike Lee movie, exceptionally well made, and it really, really was very fantastic.
Yep, The Five Bloods on everyone's list there. Again, if you haven't seen that, definitely check it out. Promising Young Woman, number three for the audience. Number two, Ken Jack.
My number two is Minari. We haven't got a chance really to like dive too deep into Minari. Yeah, just to get kind of a quick sense of it. I think it's beautiful in the sense that every A24 movie sort of is, which is what I expected going into it. But there's also like this authentic feel to it, which I also kind of expected because of it's based on the childhood of the director, Lee Isaac Chung. But you never really know how the movie is going to all come together. And I really, really liked how it all came together. I think Steven Yeun is obviously the name we were sort of familiar with going into it. And he was so, so, so good in it. And I don't think he gets the credit he deserves for his ability at emotional acting, because between like this and Burning, I want to see him in everything. He's so fucking good. And don't obviously mention even Walking Dead in this conversation, but beyond him, the kids were great. And I think Han Yi-ri, who played his wife, and Yoon Yoo-jung, who played the grandmother, were also incredible. Like, I would nominate the latter there to have at least be up for the nomination for Best Supporting Actress, because she was so good. And even LCB interviewee Will Patton in that, amazing. Yes. Really good in that role. And I really like the story and the sort of attempt at the American dream through that lens is something that I found so unique, and I really, really enjoyed that.
We'll talk more about Minari. 94 to 100 for me, number two. I'd say my favorite movie of the year, Another Round. That ending is one of my favorite endings of any movie I've ever seen. I've rewatched. They took it down off YouTube. I was bummed. I was just kind of like watching it. There's a whole loop. There's a 10-hour loop of that song. It's such an up, like a positive song. But then that it's just, it's so simple. And again, I'll use that term down to earth and down there, but it's incredibly relatable through like a different type of story. It's not just about these people going through these life problems. It's tied into this like weird drinking, like kind of case study, but it's about that appreciation, that awakening of life. That's the overarching theme of the movie. And it's just so well done. And that ending is, that's the type of ending I want to see in a movie. Not everything has to end that way, but for that story to end the way it did with that dance and that song, it was, it was awesome. It was just an awesome movie. That was, I'd say it's my favorite of the year, my favorite movie of 2020.
I've overdubbed the Gary Glitter "Hey" song.
Oh no,
that one.
True. What'd you need to
make it something less. You need something less problematic. Make it something Phil Spector did. Rest in peace. Or not.
And Promising Young Woman coming in at number two for me. Just reviewed it. Just talked about it. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's fantastic. Carey Mulligan deserves Best Actress for this one. Like I said before, you know, Frances McDormand, great actress as well. Beloved by the Academy. So, well, who knows what's going to happen. But I loved Carey Mulligan and what she did in this movie. How she bounced around. And how the movie bounced around in terms of tone. It really fucked with your head. And that was the intent. And it was well executed from that standpoint.
And then for the audience, number two, Palm Springs, let's get to the number ones. Ken Jack, number one.
So my number one is Sound of Metal. And I think it's one that I reflected on more and enjoyed more. And I think it's really special for a lot of reasons. I think it's separated from its pack, from like the pack of the rest of like the top tier movies a lot for a couple different reasons. And I think firstly, there's not a single bad performance. And I wouldn't have any problem putting Riz Ahmed up there for best actor. I'd have no issue putting up, I believe it's pronounced Paul Raci or maybe Racky, I don't know. But I have no problem putting him up there for best supporting actor. Olivia Cooke, also amazing. There's like literally not a wasted line, not a wasted frame in that movie. And I think from a storyline standpoint, it's intriguing and heartbreaking in a lot of ways. And it tells a very, very concise story. Like you're not wasting any time throughout this. And on a technical end, it's just beautiful. Like it's the music's cool, whatever you want to call that. And the sound design throughout that movie is so expertly done. And it's so unique and different and good. And there's just, I can't really in retrospect think of problems I had with that movie. Like it's that good. And I have to put it at number one.
Yes.
What would your adjusted score on it be?
My adjusted score, I think, would probably be a 97.
Okay, big score. But hey, sounds like a 97 the way you described it. And it is, it's fucking outstanding. It's an outstanding. I've suggested it to many people. Yeah, Sound of Metal is a must. Again, and it's on Amazon Prime. It's not free, yeah, it's so but it's free.
The barrier to entry is. Yeah.
Sound of Metal, number
barrier
one.
Barrier to entry movie. Love it.
My number one, Kendrick's number one, Sound of Metal. My number one, 95 out of 100, the highest score of the year for me. It is Minari, which we will talk further in depth about this upcoming weekend on Sunday. But Minari is just, I'll tell you what, I don't want to butcher her name, but you're right, Kendrick. I bit my tongue. The woman who plays the grandmother is really fucking good. Mm-hmm. And she's, I think she's the best part of the movie because she adds, because it's a very serious movie and there's a lot of parts that are sad. There's a lot of parts that are uplifting too and inspiring. But it just feels like such a real authentic look, not just like at the American dream for people who come to this country. And there's a passion in it that I just love. It's just, it's an infectious movie in that sense. But the grandmother, because you kind of said everything that needs to be said about it, but the grandmother adds such like a fun little like sharp kind of comedic element to it at times as well. Just her interaction with the kids and man, Minari is really fucking good. Minari is a movie that I hate that is not accessible right now. I really wish this is a movie I wish was a Netflix movie or was on Hulu or Prime because I wish everyone could see this. It is so fucking good. I've said it. I love A24. Every now and then they have a couple stinkers, but this was, I think it's one of A24's best movies they've had in a while. They had a decent year. They had First Cow, and I liked On the Rocks to an extent. It wasn't great by any means. I'd say above average. And they had Uncut Gems last year, which I liked in The Lighthouse. But this one, I would say, for me, with Uncut Gems, and I know that is at this point a hot take, that's up there probably their best stuff since Lady Bird, maybe Eighth Grade. I really liked Minari. Very good. I'm excited to talk more about it. Trill, number one for you.
I haven't seen Minari yet. I'm probably for sure I'll like it. So this is just a disclaimer for you, for people listening to this 5 months from now, wondering why my list is not right. It's Sound of Metal for me. I loved it. It made me tear up. The movie made me tear up. Beautiful from a standpoint of Riz Ahmed's character going through it, but also from just it was very true to how life kind of happens in terms of relationships coming and going and people coming in and out in your life and, you know, how that feels. I thought the movie did a good job of capturing that in particular, and that's kind of where it made me a little emotional. So, and I also think Riz Ahmed is probably best actor of the year as well, unless something changes my mind.
Yeah, Sound of Metal is also the audience's number one. So actually, all three of you guys had it number one.
Mm-hmm.
Sound of Metal sweeps. Well, it doesn't sweep because that means I would have had it, but it's three out of four.
The hills are alive with the sound of metal.
Uhost fades in.
A couple others that didn't make my list that I just want to shout out that we hopefully get to talk about. I know Invisible Man is we said that. Palm Creed's Springs too. Was very close for me. Creed's too. We talked about his outfit. Ones we didn't talk about though. First Cow was one of them. Shit House was another movie. I think I'll probably talk about Shit House this weekend. Coming of age comedies from IFC Films. You can rent it on Amazon. I really like Shit House. Let's see. Swamp,
oh, yeah, yeah.
One, Never Rarely, Sometimes Always was another one. Synchronic was another one as well with Jamie Dornan and Anthony Mackie. We didn't get to talk to Anthony Mackie about that one. You can rent that movie. Sylvie's Love with Tessa Thompson and Nnamdi Asomugha.
Yeah,
former NFL cornerback. He was really good in the movie. I thought it was like a gimmick that he was an actor. He was really good.
Mm-hmm. He did some other movies now too. I think some shows or something. It's Kerry Washington's husband. He has to act.
Yeah, so she's pretty fucking good. Pieces of a Woman was. That's a tough movie.
That's a brutal movie to get through, man. Yeah. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It is a very good movie. It is hard to watch.
It's just It's very, very hard to watch.
Some other ones that we didn't get to mention. Best movies of the year. My Spy. Money Plane.
Over the Moon.
I'm at the bottom now. Okay.
You saw Over the Moon. Yeah, I enjoyed that. That was another movie I watched with the little baby.
You know, it was a really bad movie that we didn't talk about? The Stand-In with Drew Barrymore.
Oh,
that's up there with Super Intelligence.
Wow.
Oh, I've been reading the gossip websites, and apparently the Ellen show is ending in 2022, according to some industry insiders, and that the two people that are maybe teed up to replace Ellen, one is Drew Barrymore.
Didn't they do an SNL skit about that?
She has a talk show.
Yeah.
It's just not the Ellen show. I don't know how they do that. I don't know if it's, it's budget, right? It's not the talk show.
True. I guess so. I don't know.
Other one's Kristen Bell, by the way.
I would like a talk show with Kristen Bell. I think I would enjoy that. But yeah. I'm also afraid, in a sense, of overexposure of Kristen Bell in the same sense that we had overexposure of Ellen. Like, I don't want her to act anything like Ellen whatsoever.
I'm fine with Kristen Bell. I don't like Dax Shepard very much. So, I wish him well, and I know he's. He's battled things, but I've never vibed with the podcast. I'm sure he's a fine individual. I just, I don't want it to be about the relationship is what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Agreed.
I figured that's what you were getting at there. All right. Anything else? I don't think so. I got nothing else.
No, let's watch some more movies. And what are we going to do next week? Should we do worst or should we do...
No, we're doing worst. No, we did worst. We're doing 2021 preview.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, baby. It's all the movies we previewed in 2020, and we get to run it back and do it again. James Bond, guess what?
I will say that is the funny thing. There's going to be a couple on the list that we talked about.
Guess what,
Fast
guys?
Fast and Furious 9 or whatever?
I wonder what the Bond song is going to be. Oh, never mind. We heard it a year ago.
Already heard
it. Had a James Bond song for 18 months. There's no surprise to this movie. Cursed movie rollout. This is the most cursed COVID movie, the James Bond movie, by the way. Because it was on the precipice of release.
Yes. We edged them.
It was edging. It was this, that was a ruined release.
It was meerkatting out the hole.
That's it. For Ken, Jack, and Trill, I'm Jeff Lowe. We will talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.